huh?
I'd love to.
You probably wouldn't get too much out of it, though.
Stay in here, you have to have 2 minutes to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Amen, brother. Amen. Okay, we are on lesson 43 and doing these exercises, so we'll finish those up today and get into 44. My marker indicates that we've gotten down to verse 10, and I think we're on page 216. And had we covered that thoroughly? I think we had. So, verse 11, Wyomer and Moshe, and John, why don't you go ahead and take that one.
Wyomer Moshe, El Elohim mi Anoki ki Elek El Paro Woki Otsi Es Bnei Israel, Mitzrayim.
Okay.
And Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the sons of Israel from Egypt?
Good. Yes, Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? It's just an imperfect form, but you're getting a modal type of translation with it. Yes.
This word you're going for, is this the
Israel
or
the
to go?
Oh, to go forth.
Called to bring forth.
Yes, that I should bring forth, yeah. Yeah, it's to go forth from Yatsa, and that's the Hifil form that gives you the cause to. Yeah. So it's just transferring. Yeah. Remember Yotzei? Yeah. Okay. Good. And that A Lake, what kind of form does that look like? Do you recognize that at all?
It looks like El with a pronoun.
Yeah, it almost does, doesn't it?
Halak.
Mm-hmm. Halak. Yeah. Remember that it's a one hay that acts as though it's a one yod or something. And you get the Aleph there is for the imperfect prefix, first person singular. Okay, good. So, total translation, and Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the sons of Israel from Egypt? Okay. Then verse 12. Tony, you want to take one? Okay. Okay. Eric. Yeah, Eric, verse 12. That's a good one. Those, when you get those extra suffixes on, they really get long. Okay. You see, our Hebrew is getting more complicated all the time.
And Moses said to God, no, I'm not wrong.
Yeah, okay.
And he said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign which I will give to you in your going
forth, you're bringing forth the people from Egypt.
You will serve God on this mountain.
Okay. Okay, there's one element there. Since I will be with you, and this for you will be, this will be the sign for you that I have. Should have that I have sent you. That I have sent you. I can't remember what you said there, but it's a little bit different. So, and he said, I will be with you, for I will be with you. Almost that key, you can almost take it as four. And he said, for I will be with you, and this for you will be, this will be the sign for you that I have sent you. In your bringing forth the children, people from Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain, or when you bring forth the children of the people from Egypt, excuse me, when you bring forth the people from Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Notice that form, ta'avdun.
Yeah.
Ever wonder about that?
Paragogic.
Yeah, paragogic nun. Yeah. So you'll see those nuns thrown in from time to time. It may have something to do with the fact that the next thing begins with a vowel. But so you know, stop you, instead of getting two vowels in a row. But other than that, I can't give you an explanation for it. It's just there. Now, that's why they call it paragogic. It's kind of, you know, it means to lead beside or something. But it's something that's there for no good reason. Yes.
The way I translate it in the first one, that key.
Uh-huh.
Because I am with you, the word that follows it was that. I translate that as then. Would that be proper? Because I am with you, then this is for you the sign. In other words, the because indicates some kind of a, you know, a causal relationship.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think in Hebrew they probably don't make a distinction like that we do, but, you know, I think that there's that idea there that this is kind of the protosystem and there's an apotosis, kind of an idea between the two, because of this, then this. And we soften it a bit, you know, for I will be with you and this shall be the sign. You know, the whole sense of this being a sign, it's a sign that I am with you, and it's something that's consequent upon that fact that I'm with you. So sometimes in English we may not be able to translate it quite as strongly just because of the contextual relationships, but I think the same concept is there. Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't want to be a real soft man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit softer just because of context. Context is the only thing that's given you those senses. You see it, you know, Hebrew, you rely so much on context. Yes.
Another question here. Just a phrase, maybe I can talk
about the
concept. Should it be, this is to you the sign, or this sign is to you?
Oh, okay, and this for you will be the sign. Yeah, this... let's see how it's worded here. Okay, I'm not sure what John had there for the connection, but
this is for you, the sign that I sent you.
Oh, this is the sign. That I have sent. Well, that's the same thing I have here, yeah. It's a sign, and the phrase that I have sent you is modifying the sign there. Yeah, this is the sign. What kind of sign? The sign that I have sent you. I think that would be the same in either case, so.
Another thing in there, you put, I have sent you. That's more of a passive.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's not passive. It'd be more of a perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah. See, I have sent you. See, passive would be I have been sent, or I was sent, or something like that. See, their problem is the English uses an auxiliary verb for both perfect and for passive, and they use it a little bit differently. So that's kind of a perfect idea, the idea being that the action was completed, and now we have the result of it. So Moses is there, and he's already been sent, but now he's referring to that action as having been completed. Mm-hmm. Well, you translated a sign? I'm not sure either. See, with the demonstrative, this, you almost always have the article on it. This is the sign. Yeah, this to you is a sign. Well, I see what you're saying. This to you is a sign. You might be able to get that sense in English. Because I think what happens there is that in English anyway, when we put a this on there, we're getting a definite idea, and then we may put a sign, but I'm not sure. This will be the sign. I think it'd be best, and this for you will be the sign that I have sent you. That would be the best, because there's a specific sign that he's talking about.
This is the structure that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Here. Now, this is the sign. Is the sign referring to the bush, or see, because this is the sign that I have sent you in to bring forth. You will serve, you will serve God on?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that you will serve God on this mountain. This will be the sign because it's almost good, you know, he's setting up the whole structure, and then he said, this will be the sign that I will be with you.
Right.
When you come bring forth the pilgrimage, or in your bringing forth, you will serve God on this mountain. So he's introducing that as being the sign. In other words, he's saying, you're going to come back to the same place and be worshiping me on this mountain, and you'll recognize at that point that I who have promised, you know, it's almost a prophecy. In other words, God's giving a prophecy of what's going to happen, and that they're going to get back there, you know. And one person might, in one sense, I think a person might say, well, it would be pretty obvious, you know, if you got back to that, you know, that could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, Moses could say, well, I'm going to go right back to that mountain to prove that. But the thing is, it wasn't just a matter of a simple, you know, they had the Red Sea in between. They had some things that they wouldn't have been able to do in the natural. And so God is saying, the fact that you've gotten back to this point, this is going to be a sign to you that I was with you all along. See what I'm saying? That God is giving a prophecy, and this is going to be a sign that I have sent you. You won't. In other words, it's one of those deals where you're not going to know all the details of this and God being with you until you get all the way back to you. You're going to go through some real trials in the wilderness. And when you get to this is going to be the sign that I've been with you, that the fact that you make it to this point. And the only way you're going to make it to that point is if I give you my grace and do a number of miracles and so forth. Of course, when we see that the history of it portrayed, you can see, especially for Moses' part, getting to this point, it's going to truly be a miracle.
I guess it would act as a, I was trying to say this, what kind of a sign it would be. He's using it, I guess, a little more broadly.
Yeah, it is. It's more broad. It's more of a sign in terms of a prophecy and a confirmation. This is going to be the confirmation that, you know.
Perhaps also as a promise, because in the midst of all that he went through, he wouldn't necessarily think that he's going to that mountain.
Exactly, know? Exactly. And I think that this may be, it's one of those things that after he gets to the mountain, he can look back and say, yes, this is exactly what God said. But when he's going through the trials, it'd be the question of whether he's ever going to get there or not. So it's not so much a sign that's going to give them an immediate boost of faith during the trial, but it's going to be a sign that once it occurs, it's going to be, you're going to look back and say, yes, God was with us all through this. Okay? It's going to require some faith, in other words. Yes?
The thing that kind of threw me off on this was the way that this was constructed was after it talks about in vain what people
received
it. And then next, the Adonai there.
There's going to be a break there. Yeah, that's a good point. You've got a disjunction there in a way, because you don't even have a wood there. This is one of those places where
it seems like it's
going to
drop up
there. Sure. It doesn't make any sense to put them together. You've got it on that again. Yeah. And I think it might be appropriate to put a colon in the translation, because this is the sign, colon, when you come forth. And you pick up the sense from the flow of the Hebrew, or the lack of flow there. Okay. Stands apart, and you feel, you feel an abruptness. Now, of course, if you don't know what these words are, you wouldn't feel an abruptness. But and that's the kind of thing you're not going to be able to get from a word study. Yes.
Another interesting thing in here is the different uses of Elohim, with and without, or particular.
Yes.
And
you'll see it used both ways. Mm-hmm. Even though it's a definite noun, maybe sometimes you've got the article.
Maybe our next study needs to be done on that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here it would make sense to say, you will serve the God on this mountain. But other times it doesn't necessarily. It's kind of, have you...
That's been a real hard one. I haven't tallied, you know. What I'd like to do is have a tally made. How often is it used with the article, how often without? But you can see what the problem is. Elohim is used 2,300 times. And you'd have to include the construct ones, you know, and a person, unless he had the computer that could, you know, punch out all the ones of the article, he would really be hard pressed. I mean, that'd be a monumental job. You could find all the places where Elohim is used just by the concordance, but then you'd have the problem of checking each one of them, see what the article's on them or not. And I haven't done that, so I really don't know what the ratio is. I've seen it both ways, but not with a, you know, such that a ratio is easily calculable.
And to do it really right, you'd have to look at each context and see if there's anything, any purpose or reason behind it. Otherwise,
yeah.
You just have a tally.
Yeah. And so you, and yeah, really, you just have a tally, and that's right. And you have to watch for the construct ones because the article will be on the noun following. You know, that's the problem with the angel of Yahweh and so forth that happens, or the situation with the angel of Yahweh. There's seldom an article on angel, but it's in construct with Yahweh, and Yahweh is a definite noun, proper name, and so that's why you get the angel of Yahweh there, and so. You've got several things to consider when you look at that phrase, and all the books mostly say is it's used with or without the article. And you know, I've never been real comfortable and real satisfied with that. I've always felt down inside there's probably some kind of a nuance, some kind of a difference. You know, I mean, if something can be done both ways, you know, when you talk, you usually just don't throw things out at random. There's a reason why you. It may be a subtle reason. It may be more of a feeling. Maybe more of an emphasis. But that's what I would expect is the case. But I can't prove the point unless I have a, you know, do a thorough study. That's the thing. And I think that's really why many of the books don't commit themselves, because they haven't done the study and they know how difficult it would be to do it. I mean, they're not stupid. You know, they know that it's going to be a job.
Students in here do about 250
apiece. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's the one he wants. That's a wise man. My. Okay. Now, verse 13. Eric, you did the last one. Price, I guess you're up next on verse 13.
Okay. Vayomer, Moshe, El, Ha'elohim, Hine, Anoki, Ba, El, Bene, Israel, Vayamra, Vati, Vahem, Elohe, Avo, Sechem, Wyomer,
Moshe. Oops, skipped the line. Or, yeah, you went back up to the first line.
Shabbatmi, Alekem, Wa Amarvi, Ma Shemo, Ma Omar, Elo, Alekem.
Okay, Alekem. Mm-hmm. All righty.
But Moses said to God, behold, here's the question. I could take Ba as the perfect, or I could take it as a participle.
Yeah, take it as a participle.
Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers sent me to you. And they will ask to me, what is his name? What will I say to them?
Okay, good. Yeah, take it as a participle, just because what follows is a converted perfect, and you're getting an imperfect idea. And the participle idea here, especially with the verb come, you could say, "Behold, I come to the sons of Israel," but that's a little bit, you know, I will come or I am coming. In other words, "Behold, I am coming to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them." He's kind of expressing a hypothetical situation that he anticipates is coming to pass. So we might even translate it. What I did is I put I will come. I put the will in parentheses because it's being seen by the fact that it's a participle, and you have to kind of sense the tense from the context, and then having a converted perfect is one of those instances where a series continues with something other than a verbal beginning. There's a little, you know, little section or blurb somewhere back there that talked about this kind of construction using a participle and continuing converted perfects. So, I am coming, or I will come to the sons of Israel, and will say to them, well, I'll start from the beginning. And Moses said to God, behold, I will come to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers sent me unto you. And they will say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? Okay, notice the word ma they're used for what is his name, which is appropriate because you're asking for the name rather than me, who is he? You're asking, what is the name? And it's something worth pointing out from an exegetical standpoint, that the question is concerning the name and the authority of the name and so forth, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, in other words, Moses is seeming to want something more than just Oh, it's the God of Abraham, you know. He wants something more personal, something that carries more authority. Okay, any other questions on that one? Yeah. And Moses said to God, "Behold, I am coming," or "I will come, to the sons of Israel. And I will say to them, the God of your fathers sent me unto you. And they will say to me, what is his name? And then what shall I say to them?" Now, there's not much punctuation here, but it's not much else you can do with it. And again, it's the same kind of thing you mentioned before. There's no punctuation, but there's obviously a break. So you've got Ma Shemo, and then Ma Amar Alehim. What shall I say to them? Because you couldn't really run it together. They wouldn't be asking a question, what is his name, what shall I say to them? You know, that's not their question. So you do have to get a pickup of the flow of Hebrew in order to really make punctuation make any sense. Because there is relatively little punctuation. In the actual text, you probably find some Athnachs or Seleuks or something. I mean, you know, some of our little squiggles or squirrels or, you know, little rather funny punctuation marks in here. Accent shifts or, you know, different types of accents and that type of thing for musical tone. Okay. Verse 14 then, Duck. That's a hard one to say. No wonder we say Ehyeh, Asher Ehyeh is the way you'd have to say it in Hebrew. Okay.
And God said to Moses, I am that I am. And he said, thou shalt say before Israel, I am to you.
Okay. Okay. This livne isn't lifne. It's kind of tricky. You had before, but it'd be to the sons of Israel. Livne. See, it's from b'nei sons in the preposition lamed. So it's tricky because all you have, you know, you're just taking the F sound and the B sound and changing them. So the pay would have been there in lifne. Okay. And it's easier. I'll catch it like that and you won't notice it. So thus, and God said to Moses, I am that I am. And he said, thus will you say to the sons of Israel, I am hath sent me to you. Okay. And he's got, doesn't he have a footnote there, a cryptic phrase? Yeah, cryptic phrase not fully understood. Okay, verse 15, any other questions on that one? It's pretty easy anyway. The more cryptic they are, the easier they are. John. Verse 15, we'll finish her up. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Vayomer od Elohim el Moshe ko tomar el b'nei Yisrael Yahweh Elohim avotekem Elohe Abraham Elohe Yitzhak.
Yeah, Yitzhak. Yitzhak. That's a real good one.
Elohe Yaakov. Shalachni. Elohim. Ze Shemi. Leolam. Waze Zikri. Ledod. No,
Ledor. Yeah, Ledor. Okay.
And again God said to Moses, thus shall you say to the sons of Israel, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, sent me to you.
Okay.
This is my name.
Right.
For eternity or forever.
Mm-hmm.
And this you shall this remember.
Okay, this is
after generation.
All right. This zikri is actually a noun with a suffix my. So this is my memorial. It's from the same verb, but zikri would be a noun with a suffix on it. So this is my memorial or remembrance. And then to generation of generations, or you could say forever there too, I suppose.
Well, generation after generation because of that.
Yeah.
The reason you see you've got generation coming after generation,
mm-hmm.
literally, physically.
Right. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Weilohe. Uh-huh. That's just because of the addition of the form of wo plus the, with the. Right. Yeah. I don't know if he ever specified that with Elohim or not. Maybe he didn't. Maybe it was another book I saw that.
The wow coming before and all.
Yeah.
Particularly before and all the Aleph.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just a quiescent of the Aleph. Yeah, I think he might have mentioned that there. There should be something on the... this would be hard to find. Remember what chapter it was way back there when we had the various forms of the conjunction wa, and then on an aleph there. I thought there was some little statement to that effect. There was a little chart. Yeah. I don't think so. I think it was before that when we just were consulting. It may have only mentioned with a yod, on getting we. But I... Okay. No, that's called consecutive. It's got to be further back here. Okay. Maybe it doesn't say before guttural. Junction is wa or wo. It doesn't mention that there. It doesn't mention the Aleph. Of a quiescent. I guess it's, the reason he doesn't mention it is most of the time Aleph will do what it does here, but this is just an example where it quiesces. So it is something that is an unusual thing. So maybe we don't have a rule for it. I thought somewhere, I may be thinking of another book that I read it in or something. Yes.
After Yisrael,
mm-hmm.
verse 15, it says Yah, or something like that. I looked in the text had Yahweh, I think normally spelled it, with the
mm-hmm.
comments of the well, but he had a colon by one. Any reason for that?
Okay, which one are you looking at?
It's right, El, B'nai, Yisrael, right in that first line, 15.
Okay, yes, okay.
Yahweh.
Oh, yeah, I put a little line through that, too. That's probably just a remnant of the vowel points that stuck on it. Remember Yahweh? They put the vowel points of Adonai on the Tetragrammaton. That's the way it normally appears in the text, is with the vowel points of and he normally doesn't put the vowel points on it, but apparently here somebody went ahead and put it on that one vowel point on. In other words, if you see it in the actual Hebrew text, if you get your snath out or one of the actual text or greens or whatever, you'll see the Tetragrammaton Yahweh with the shows. You'll see a shua, and a colon, and then a comma. And that cholam, it depends on the print, but sometimes it looks like it's over the wild, sometimes it's over to the side a little bit, you know. It kind of depends on the print, so I think that's probably what happened. That's my guess, but it shouldn't be there. Or somebody just had a typo error, you know, they're just used to seeing cholam wilds in places like that. We'll give them some mercy. Huh?
Oh, that could be, yeah. Are
we getting close to
that? Yes, we are. We are. Yeah. So. Okay. Any other questions?
I was wondering about that generation.
Yes.
Could that be part of the concept?
Yeah. Yeah, just think of the first Lador as being construct and then the second door an absolute. So to generation of generation would be literal. Okay. And since it's monosyllabic, it's not going to change its form in construct. So. Any other questions? Okay, well, lesson 44 then. A little bit more on hyphial verbs, stems and inflection. We're going to deal with three guttural and three aleph types here. And there's not a whole lot of complications with these. It's just mainly vowel points when you're dealing with certain forms. So you see the two guttural type here, hishmia. You get the fathat furtive there. That's not a surprise. Imperfect, yashmia, adjusive, yashma. Imperative, hashma. Infinitive construct, hashmia. Participle, mashmia. Three aleph, we get hishmi. There's no quiescent aleph. There's no pathak furtive, but the aleph quiescent. So it's hishmi, yashmi, and then the justive yamse. Excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm getting the wrong verb here. Himsi, yamsi, and yamse. Imperative, hamse. Infinitive construct, hamsi, and participle, mamsi. Now remarks. A guttural other than aleph in the third position affects only those forms which have seri in the final stem syllable of the corresponding non-guttural type. So it's only the ones that have seri there, it's going to get pathak instead. So in the imperfect, feminine, plural, adjusive, and imperative, this is replaced by pathak. The paradigm is otherwise like that of hishmid, except for the furtive pathak with the final guttural. So you just have to add a pathak furtive because the guttural, or the final guttural there coming before, right after a long, unchangeable long vowel, and the fact that you get pathak on some of the forms where you had seri before. So looking at the imperfect here, you got yashmia, tashmia, etc., and then it's tashmana with pathak. The adjusive yashma, tashma, etc. The imperative. Hashma, hashmi'i, hashmi'u, and hashmana. There's the pathak again. So instead of a seri, you get a pathak there. If you look back at the original paradigm of the hyphial, just in this previous chapter, you'll see in the imperfect. Well, let's see, where am I looking? Okay, in the imperfect form, you would have that tashmena. There for the imperfect would have been it would have you would have there's a you would have expected a seri there, but it gets pathak. So it's mainly in that feminine plural forms, second or third person, that you're going to see a difference, and then the pathak furtive. But this should present no real problem recognition wise. Then the hyphial verbs from roots three aleph have seri. And then with the quiescent aleph in the perfect before endings beginning with a consonant, and himsetha, just like the nifal, nimsetha, etc., pl, mil-atha. We've seen this kind of thing before, so it's nothing unusual. You just get the seri in the quiescent aleph before these suffixes that begin with a consonant. All other forms are the same as those of hishmid, except for the feminine plural of the imperfect, where we find the usual sagol with the aleph and so forth. So what he means by this is that normally we saw a sagol there. The three gutturals change it to a pathak that we just read, but the three alephs go ahead and keep have a sagol there instead. So I guess it is a change. It's not a seri. It's a sagol. It's not what you expected, but it's common for the call three aleph verb. The three aleph verb in the call, like matzah, and the call did that too. So it's what he's saying is it's the usual, that is usual for three aleph verbs in the call. It's not usual for all verbs, but usual for three aleph. Okay, the top of the next page gives you some indicative forms there, and you can see that in the perfect we've got himsi, himsi'a, and then himseitha. Himseitha changes in the aliquiescence for the suffix that begins with a consonant. Now the one before, the suffix began with a vowel. It's just a, you know, comma's hey, so it doesn't do that. In the imperfect, that just noting that one form, tam sena, there with the segol. Okay, then the verb hecheti combines the features of one guttural and three aleph. So you have to go back to the one guttural in the previous chapter and then the three aleph here and mix them together. We've already had to do that before with the call and other things anyway. Okay, then more on numbers. Oh, the segol, between the segol or the pathak, that only involves... let's see. It's going to be a segol because the three alephs will always stay with segol. Yeah. Because you just combine the rule for the three aleph, and the three aleph would keep that a segol. And then the one guttural element isn't going to affect that directly. So there shouldn't be any conflict there. Not at all. Okay. Because this is only dealing with the first two vowels. It's that hirik yod vowel that where the other problem comes in. Okay, some more on numbers. Section A, the tens. Apart from 20, which is expressed by the plural form of 10, so you've got tens, two tens, this makes 20. They just put the srim, so they just put the number 10 in the plural. The tens are the plurals of the corresponding units. This is kind of interesting and a little bit unusual, I suppose, the way normally numbers are done. But what they'll do is they'll take the number 3 and put it in the plural, threes, which means 30. And we wouldn't normally think of it that way, I suppose. But so here's your, and then 40 would be the number 4 put in the plural, and 50 the number 5 put in the plural, etc. So, Shiloshim for 30, Arbaim for 40, Chamishim for 50, Shishim for 60, Shivim for 70, Shimonim for 80, and Tishim for 90. So, kind of an interesting way of expressing things. Yeah, we just change the form. We take the number 8 and then we just put an ending on it. If you think of it that way, that's pretty good. That'll keep you from getting confused. But we don't use the plural form. In other words, they're using a plural form. We don't say eights. You know, I mean, to get a direct analogy to English, you'd be saying eights. Right. Yeah, well, it may have stand for 10, too. Eight tens, you know. I don't know. That might be my guess. Yeah. Is it used for what? Third story, yes. Okay. Well, he's going to get to these ordinals here down here a little bit too. Mm-hmm. And the similarities between those. Do they listed both as third and 30? Oh, okay. Yeah, there may be some debate on some of those just because of the way they've chosen to do it. Okay. Now, they may be used with either a singular noun, the more common usage, or the plural noun. So, Shiloshim Ish would be 30 men, even though they've used the word ish singular, or Shiloshim Anashim, 30 men. More commonly, you'll see it with the singular, and the plural is getting seen from the number that's being given. I suppose you may even almost think of this as a kind of like a construct relationship. It's not, obviously the form isn't a construct, but something like 30 of men, you know, 30 units of men. If you think of it that way, maybe that will help it. They may also be used as ordinals, and this is where your example would come in. So they use these same plural forms as ordinals. So Bishnath Arvaim in the 40th year. So in the year of 40, 40th year. Okay. Then B, fractions are poorly attested. The expression for half, chatzi, is unrelated to the number 2. A fourth, Reva or Rova, a fifth, Chomesh. No, those are related to the numbers, obviously, but that's about as many as we find in the scripture. We don't find a lot of fractional systems set up in the scripture. Okay. Huh? A theory? No, I suppose. I've heard speculations that the Hebrews weren't very mathematically minded and so forth, but I, you know, I'm not so sure I buy that. There's a lot of numbers in scripture, and there's, you know, there's ratios, and a lot of those people who make those claims don't know anything about typology and the significance of numbers and the relationships and so forth. It's true that the Hebrews may not have been noted for their, you know, mathematical prowess in the world and that type of thing, but to say that they weren't mathematically minded at all, I think it's going too far. I suppose more, too, that when you're dealing with numbers, usually it's in typological connections, and usually there it's multiplying numbers and combinations of numbers rather than showing fractions. And I suppose another thing, too, would be in terms of their weights and measures and that type of thing, you seldom see, you know, a real refinement in their numbering system to that point, where they're not measuring things that precisely and so forth. That may be part of it, too, where you don't, you know, halves and fourths and fifths, you know, those are pretty, you know, you might see those more frequently, but sixteenths and eighteenths and so forth, you just don't have occasion to see something like that.
I suspect in regard to measurement that up until probably recently, most languages
practice. Yeah.
So that's, we have foot, we have inches, we have the words, but an inch is between now.
Right.
There's 12 of them to an inch, but we never, you never think of it as 1/12 of a foot.
Right.
It's always an inch.
Yeah. Just don't think of it. In fact, what you'll see sometimes in the Hebrew is to say the third part or the fourth part. So rather than saying a fourth, but they'll use the word part and talk and just word it differently. It may be able to get more expressions there, too. But a word for half or a word, you know, a word for sixth doesn't appear, apparently. Yes?
Interesting, though, that the Greek,
the word third, which is a third,
mm-hmm.
to be used
either as a statement of third, cardinal.
Yeah, that'd be
ordinal.
Third.
Or in Revelation, it's all three different times. In practice, that way,
mm-hmm.
third of the
that would be just analogous to the way English uses it.
Yeah.
Third for both ordinal and fractional.
Mm-hmm. So they did have fractional ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And they tend, and of course you got times and half a time.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a fraction.
Yeah, you can express those fractional ideas by expressing different ways, like John was saying. You know, they might express it differently, using just jump to a different unit. Instead of right,
sure,
and they did. You find things like half of an omer and things like that too. So, but they don't. You know, you don't see a 23rd of an omer or something like that.
No, 3.14.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an exchange rate and everything. Yeah. Okay. Then. Part C, there'd be a tenth part of tithe, you know, and that he may not be including that here, but it may be worded as a tenth part, something different. In addition to the regular series of ordinals, where you have Rishon, Shene, Shiloshi, etc., there is a second type attested only by Shilesh, meaning a third, and Ribah, a fourth. To judge from their limited use, they are more substantival than adjectival. That which pertains to the third, etc. That which pertains to the third, that which pertains to the fourth. So he's saying that just the usage of them tends to make them more substantives rather than the ordinals, you know, first, second, third, that type of thing. Then D, adverbial multiplicatives are usually expressed with pa'am, pa'am meaning once, pa'amayim, which would be the dual form of that, that'd give you twice. And then you just go with numbering now, shalosh pa'amim, excuse me, just using the plural form of pa'am with the number three. So shalosh pa'amim, etc. Yeah, three onces, yeah. And then, but also attested are the forms Shiva Tayim, sevenfold, and Arba Tayim, fourfold. So So you'll see sevenfold, fourfold, because again, these typological numbers, you're going to see those special words for those.
It's got that a dual ending on it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Both of them have a dual ending. And that this may be the phrase sevenfold that's used in Genesis. I'll have to check it for the numbers of the unclean animals in the ark. I mean, the clean animals in the ark, where they took seven. There's a big debate as to whether it's seven or 14. And it kind of hinges on this dual form here, if I remember correctly. So some say, well, it's seven pairs, you know, and so it gets this. And others argue, no, it's just seven. And I don't want to stake my eternal life on either one. Okay? All right. So, but just more than the other ones. Okay, then E. Most of the units have corresponding verbs, usually PL, which have a rather wide-ranging meanings. To do something X times, to divide into X parts, or to do something for an X time. So there'll be verbs, PL verbs, that are built on the numbers. And you'll have to look at the context and things to get the exact sense. For example, we've got shana, a verb, to repeat or do again, from the number two, to do the second time, you see, to repeat. Or shalesh, to divide into three parts. Well, of course, that might, you know, just to look at it, you wouldn't know whether it's divided into three parts or multiplied by three or do three times or whatever, but it happens to be dividing, apparently, the way it's used. Rava, to be square, or to make square, of course, from the number four. Four squares, say four sides. So that's something to be aware of as well. And you're going to have to, not all of them are going to have a consistent meaning, you know, but you're going to see that their idea is a number and it's been made into a verb. Okay, vocabulary, chapter 44. Is there any question, John?
Yeah, I believe
before you get on. Oh, you want to, yeah, let me give you the assignment then. For tomorrow, part A, number 1, 6, 12, 18. 1, 6, 12, and 18. Then part B, for once we'll do those, do all of those, 50 fish, 20 tablets, 30 stones, so forth, just to get experience with those numbers. So we'll do all of those in part B, and then the reading in part D. The reading in part D, which is continuing our series here. Okay. Got a few minutes. We'll run through this vocabulary here. Hishmia, to cause to hear, to tell or proclaim. So it's from the verb shama, to hear, and now it's causative, to cause to hear. So that means to tell or proclaim. Excuse me. Himsi, to cause to find, or to present, to cause to be found. So if you present something to somebody, you went and found it, you know, for them and presented it in front of them, and so you caused them to find it. That's the way they're thinking. Okay, chati, to cause to sin or to lead into sin. That's pretty straightforward. Remember, we had chata, to sin. So this is the easy feel form. Hits liach means to make prosperous or to be prosperous. I don't know if there's a call form for that or not. Hishlich, to throw. Well, that makes some sense. Although it's got a kaf here instead of the chesa, you know, you can see some connection with shalach, but there may be another verb too. It'd be interesting to check. Hishmit, to destroy. We talked about that one. And erik, to lengthen, transitive, or to be long, intransitive. This one's used both ways. So to lengthen something or to be long yourself, intransitive sense. Zavach, to sacrifice. So we're just an ordinary old call verb. Ganav, to steal. And ratzach, to kill. Another verb for kill. This is with or without intent or premeditation. Well, that covers just about everything. I mean, everything's with or without intent. Okay. And then mateh, staff or rod or tribe. And there may be a connection because of the banner that they used to represent the tribes, you know. And that rod of my staff? Okay. That'd be interesting to see if it's the same word that's used for a shepherd's staff, too. And I would expect that if this is the word that's used in Psalm 23, then it's probably the word for shepherd staff as well. And they use the same word for tribe.
Yeah. There's been that the shepherd's rod,
almost like a scepter or something, that same kind of idea, symbol of their authority.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There was a distinguishing, though, the ones that the shepherd needs to put on.
Right.
You had to have the straight ones or the little ones that were like the club on the belt were the ones that he put in there. But the ones with the crooks, there's something else.
That would be interesting. I can see the possible connection there, not even with the staff for the flagpole, but with the idea of the leader of the tribe, you know, having a staff showing his authority.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and the idea of a scepter of a king and so forth may have gotten from that.
There's a whole bunch of custom books on that.
Yeah.
Kind of way and you get to
each other,
you know, not everybody quite agreed.
Yeah.
Came up with it, and I
didn't. Okay. Well, now you got the Hebrew word here. Tony, do you have something there? Question? Okay. Okay, kaf, meaning palm or hollow of the hand, or sole of the foot. So it's just kind of that hollow area. Interesting. That's probably the word that's used in Kings there, where it's 1 Kings 18. The cloud that's like the hollow of a man's hand after the Mount Carmel experience and the rain's coming. And then the chen, meaning it's an adverb synonym of hine, yes. So, excuse me, that's just hein, not chen. Hein. So it's maybe a shortened form of hine. Okay. In the hollow of my hand? Or mark him in the hand? I don't know. It would be interesting to check it. I expect this is the word that's used, though. This word seems to be used pretty frequently. It's got that... you see, we usually don't think of the hollow of the hand as much as they do. I mean, to them, that hollow of the hand is important. So I would expect this word to be used there. Now, and you mean the one about engraving me in the palm of the... Yeah, that... It'd be interesting to see if there's a different word for palm, too, but I would expect this to be it. Okay. The bell's about to ring on us here, so I don't know if we want to get started with this. Yes.
What do they do then for these numbers when they start getting up into the hundreds and stuff? They have a separate word for hundreds, or maybe a formula of the word ten again a different way.
Yeah, I think there's a separate word for hundred. I think we're going to get some more on this. Yeah, the numbers 21 to 99 are in the next chapter. And then... let me see here if I can find the place for you. I think we get to ascend up the scale here. Yeah, a final remark on numbers. Numbers above 99 employ the following words. Page 255. You've got a word for 100, you've got a word for 1,000, you've got a word for 10,000. And then you're going to build them up, you know, accordingly. It looks like you're dealing with mostly round numbers, so although you can theoretically build it, you just add the other to it, just like most other numbering systems. You know, you'll say 150 and 3, you know, that kind of thing. So, and they may even do it in different order, but they do have numbers, you know, like the 121st year of the reign of such and such. Yes?
The word here, Kathleen, was used in my
hand. Oh, is it? Okay, for the palms of my hand? Okay. And it'd be interesting to check, though. Did you happen to find the one in where the cloud is like the hollow of man's hand? I'd be almost certain that this is the same word, too. Yeah. Okay, so much for that. Tomorrow we'll proceed. Your Hebrew, your tests, I'm hoping to I hope to have to you tomorrow, but I can't promise it, as long as nothing unusual happens tonight. I had a stack of tests from all kinds of different classes that I'd given just before I gave you yours, so I had to crank those out mid-semester as well as at the same time.
It's my own fault for giving so many tests.
Add more work for myself.